You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M-Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another fun-filled edition of the M-Squared TechCast. I believe this is episode
119.
119.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Some people mislabeled the last one 117 twice, but we won't talk about that.
Yet another reason to start the Jessica cam.
That's it. I'm thinking.
Okay. All right. So anyway, episode 119, we've got a great show for you today. We're going to kick it off with a longtime friend of the TechCast, Linda Deschent from the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back, guys. Good to be here.
So many things going on, but I'm going to start with the one where I can plug the most. Here, leave my belt. There we go. Okay.
That's our shameless plug,
Bill. Yeah, well, so, you know.
Okay.
So as we both know, since we've been only talking about this since last October,
yeah.
Seems like last year. Well, it was last year. So IoT Tech Connect, April 4th at the Troy Marriott, and you are actually coordinating two of the panels. One of them is on connected tech, and the other one is on IIoT. Why don't you explain? Because I know what those mean, but other people may not.
Absolutely. Well, IIoT is actually Industrial Internet of Things, and basically that means using connected technologies within the manufacturing environment. And so for that particular track, we're putting together several panels where we will have companies who supply that kind of equipment or those kinds of services, as well as companies who utilizing that technology in their workplace environment to talk about, you know, how the impact of these technologies is really impacting the manufacturing process in a variety of industries.
Yeah, and then connected tech that has
connected
so many...
Connected tech, we're actually focusing on three different topics, one session on each. The first one is going to be focusing on careers, high-demand connected tech careers. One of the things that you probably have heard a lot from people is that, you know, there's a lot of fear going on that all of these technology advances are going to cause people to lose their jobs. But the part that they're not talking about is the fact that it's creating so many jobs in so many different areas that are frankly going unfilled because employers cannot find people to fill them. Literally hundreds of thousands of jobs, even here in Michigan. So that's one of the things that we want to make sure to educate people about is the kinds of new jobs that are becoming available, make sure that students, parents are finding out the kinds of opportunities out there so that they can get prepared for them, and that employers can talk about the kinds of things that they're going to be looking for. And then our second session is going to be focusing on connected buildings and energy management systems, so smart homes, smart buildings that are both the buildings that we'll talk about will be residential, commercial, and industrial. So we have some experts from Michigan talking about that. And then our last panel is going to be talking about how connected technologies are changing the healthcare industry. So some really interesting things to talk about.
Yeah, it's a pretty big conference. We're not sure how many, since it's our first year, everyone says, how many folks are you going to have? And I go, as many as show up, you know? I don't know what to tell you. But we're having it at the Troy Marriott, hoping to have several hundred, maybe 500 to 1,000. It's hard to say. Still 3 weeks away. Ticket sales are going on. And we are still organizing a lot of stuff. I have sitting next to me, Tim Boucher from Inforum's Engage program, and she's helping us put together the accelerator co-working space and training, I guess, right?
Entrepreneurial ecosystem?
Yes, that's it.
And women in tech.
Yes, women in tech. We got all sorts of stuff going on. Also, autonomous and connected vehicles that I'm organizing that one myself. We're going to have folks there from M-City, from American Center for Mobility, Kurt Strudel. Is that how I'm pronouncing his name? Strudel?
Steidel.
Steidel. Thank you. From the DOT is going to be there.
He's a Lawrence Tech grad, by the way.
Oh, so. Well, go ahead. Yes, right, yeah, okay. Plug that. Yeah. And we have a lot of other folks. We have a surprise guest that I have not been given permission yet to announce his arrival, but he'll
well,
be coming.
Well, that narrows it down by half.
Yeah. An important government official. That's all I can tell you right now. But until I get sign off from his office, I can't tell you what his name is, but...
Does
we should probably
rhyme?
Leave that one alone before
say,
we go
does
any
his,
further.
Does
yeah.
his name rhyme with Nick Spider or something? No? Okay. All right.
So anyway, yeah, it's going to be a great show. Only $20 to get in. Kept it purposely low. We're going to do it free, but then Timber talked me out of that and said free is bad, that people will sign up and not show
well,
up.
Well, that's what I can tell you from experience with all those WWJ events.
See, I listened to Timber a lot. You
we
know,
would have so. 200 people sign up and 60 show. You
yeah,
know?
Well,
I mean, that's,
yeah.
that's the kind of thing you get
a
with a free event.
Little skin in the game, and then they got to show up,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And even $20.
Hey,
and,
they want that box lunch, you know? What
yeah.
can I tell
oh,
you?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the other thing is we feed you for $20. I mean... You can't get lunch in oh, Troy for $20.
Breakfast and lunch.
Yeah.
That's outstanding.
Heck of a
Linda,
deal.
I wanted to tell you, this is, you know, the kinds of panels that you're organizing here and going to be involved in, this is pretty far afield from where the organization started out. I think that kind of shows just how far these technologies have sort of seeped into everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when we started, and that's part of the reason we still have the name Mobile Technology Association. Everything was really focused on just mobile, what you could do with your handset. But now the technologies have really evolved, and it's more about connected tech because everything is now connected, and many of those things are connected to your handset. But now it's a lot about machine-to-machine technologies and machine-to-automobiles and your automobile to your handset, and everything is being connected. So eventually we're probably going to have to change our name just to keep up.
You could call it the IoT Association of Michigan or something.
Something. We're looking into it. We're making some decisions on what we're going to have to do about that.
So anyway, yeah, we probably covered the show as much as we should. We should talk a little bit more about MTAM. There's actually an event going on this afternoon for those folks listening live. That's going to be going on in Troy up at RIIS, RIS, however you pronounce
yeah.
is that.
Yeah, we have our monthly Mobile Monday Detroit event taking place tonight at 5:30 at RIS in Troy, which is on Stevenson Highway. And the topic tonight is going to be on connected infrastructure for autonomous vehicles. Mm. And, you know, we've talked in the past about the vehicles themselves and how they talk to each other and all of that sort of thing. But tonight we're really going to be focusing on the infrastructure that enables them to work with the roads and the streetlights and the street signs and all of the other infrastructure that takes place. So we've got someone who's going to be talking about the testing facility that's going to exist at the American Center for Mobility and how it's going to be testing the infrastructure with the vehicles. We have somebody from the Oakland County Road Commission who's going to be talking about the work that is currently being done on I-75 in Oakland County, because while they're expanding that roadway, they're also incorporating connected tech infrastructure elements. And then we also have somebody from MDOT, again, who will be talking about statewide what's being done infrastructure-wise.
Yeah, that to me, that's the really exciting part of a lot of this connected and autonomous vehicle stuff is the communication between vehicles and roadside infrastructure. We just had another one of those horrible chain reaction car crashes in Jackson County last week. A good friend of mine from Dearborn was involved in the one on I-96 last year. And then there was that awful one the year before that on I-94 near Battle Creek. I mean, it's
there was one on 131 going north of Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
winter storm.
Yeah. And if you have
cars, just keep happening because the cars don't see until it's too late because the people can't react fast enough. So if the technology enables the car to know about it farther in advance, the car can stop itself before the driver or the rider is even aware of what's going on. You know, it could be a mile up the road.
Right.
It gives them plenty of time to stop, and it enables the prevention of those kinds of really serious accidents.
Yeah, in a whiteout, you need to slow it down like way before you think you do. So
Absolutely.
A lot of these things. So yeah, and it would be nice if the car, you know, could do that for you. We're also seeing more and more of these technologies in less and less expensive vehicles. I was surprised at the auto show to see stuff like adaptive cruise control and emergency braking in cars that were like little Econo boxes costing $18,000. I mean, it's not like this is only for big expensive cars anymore.
No, it absolutely isn't. It's definitely something that is in the not distant future going to be in every vehicle that's out there on the road. Eventually, you're not going to be able to buy a car that does not include it. And that's why it's so important to have an understanding of what these technologies do, how they interact, how the vehicles interact with each other, how they interact with the infrastructure. And again, that's some of the stuff that we'll be talking about tonight at Mobile Monday Detroit.
Okay. Other than that, how are things? How's membership? How's the organization doing?
Well, we're doing well, always looking for new members. So certainly if there are companies that are interested in either promoting the work they're doing in connected technologies, we'd love to have them, or companies that are interested in learning more and being involved and understanding how they can utilize the technologies, we'd love to have them involved as well. We've also recently gotten some educational institutions and some nonprofits. So basically, MTAM is really something about bringing together all the different parts of the ecosystem. And a big part of what we're really working on these days is trying to help people understand about those career opportunities and the kind of training they need. So we are working a lot these days with the educational institutions.
Hmm. So what can you tell me about that in a minute? Because we've got a little over a minute left about what, you know, what kind of education that these employers are telling you that people should be looking at.
Well, the educational institutions are really starting to try to get a handle on it. To be honest, many of them have been pretty far behind.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working with them to help them understand what employers need. And so a lot of them are really now starting to adapt their training and make more things available.
All right. And so if they want to get more information about MTAM, go ahead. Give us the shameless plug.
Absolutely. Our website is gomobilemichigan.org, and they can always contact me at linda@gomobilemichigan.org.
Okay. Linda Deschent from the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan, who's also helping Mike organize IoT Tech Connect, a whole bunch of panels there on industrial Internet of Things and connected technologies. That event, once again, folks, Wednesday, April the 4th at the Troy Marriott. All day long, pretty much.
All day long.
9 to 6 or 7 or so, something
like
that.
Well, it starts at 7:30 and goes till 8:30, and I'm coming in the night before.
You're getting me out of bed early that day.
I know, yeah.
Man, okay. All right, well, it's one of those days. It's just going to be a long one, but a good one.
Okay.
All right, until next time, Linda, thanks for appearing once again, and we'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast here on the Podcast Detroit Network. This is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's We really should determine who's going to do this before we start.
Thing,
yeah,
yes.
Something like
I was
like going to
start because then you could introduce your guests.
Okay,
here,
so go ahead.
This is Mike Brennan.
After you, my dear Alphonse. And it's yes. Matt Rausch.
And you're listening to the second segment of M Squared TechCast on the Podcast Detroit Network. Take it away, man.
Okay.
I know you have guests here.
All right. Yes, we have a couple people here from an event connected with Lawrence Tech, which is my employer. We have Catherine Phillips of the wonderful LTU Library. And there is she has a keen interest in basically, so does Lawrence Tech as an institution in the work and the legacy of legendary architect Albert Kahn, who has been referred to as the man who built Detroit, at least industrial and commercial Detroit, certainly. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And you've got an author here. We are doing an event at Lawrence Tech that's going to be March 28th. It's going to be a speech by a reporter, architectural reporter named Michael Hodges, who unfortunately could not be with us today, about his new book, Building the Future, Albert Kahn in Detroit. So, Catherine, I'm going to rely on you to tell me about that book and about what he's going to say. But we also do have here in the studio Jeff Morrison, a renowned historian and photographer, who's got a book coming out next year called Guardians of Detroit, Architectural Sculpture in the Motor City. And
anything like you. That's on the book cover.
On the cover,
you know,
so. Yeah. There's a lovely gargoyle from one of the downtown buildings on the cover. And I will assure you that's not what Jeff looks
like. Oh, okay,
like.
Good. That's, yes, yeah. Yes.
But we can't talk about what people look like on the radio. So, you know, anyway. So, Catherine, tell me about this March 28th event. Tell me a little bit about the Albert Kahn Research Consortium that Lawrence Tech is part of.
So, the Albert Kahn Research Coalition started about 2 years ago. Our goal is to both preserve and identify Albert Kahn collections and resources across the United States. We have a lot of great ideas for the future. We've already sponsored one all-day symposium last year. We plan another one for 2019. But on March 28th at 7 p.m., we have a couple of great programs planned, starting out with Michael Hodges doing an Albert Kahn lecture. He's going to get into talking about his book, interesting tidbits he's uncovered about Albert Kahn. He's already given me a couple of little clues, and you're really in for a good lecture. But in addition, we're really excited to have Jeff Morrison here. He's going to follow up after the Hodges lecture. The group's going to get up and head across the hall to Jeff's great exhibit called Guardians of Detroit. And that exhibit right now is on is open at Lawrence Tech until April 1st. If you can't make it on the 28th, you still can come to A210 at Lawrence Tech in the Architecture Gallery to see that really neat exhibit. And Jeff is going to tell us a little bit about his book that he's currently working on with the Wayne Press. Is going to be releasing that next year, Jeff?
Yeah, that'll be released March 1st of next year. It's going to be about 312 pages, have about 700 photographs.
Wow.
There's 59 featured buildings in the book where they'll be covered more in depth, and then another 92 additional buildings are covered in the book. Mm-hmm. Lots of pictures.
So is it one of those kind of coffee table kind of books? Or?
Yeah, it will be. It's about 8.5 by 11 finished size,
uh-huh.
And nice big pages, lots of color photographs.
Oh yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your career. What got you interested in this particular? What got you interested in photography in the first place, and then this particular branch of photography?
Well, I got my my first camera. My dad gave me a camera when I was about 9 years old, and he was an amateur photographer, and I was always very interested in architectural sculpture and buildings in general. And also I did a lot of nature photography. So I had some telephoto lenses, longer lenses. And the thing about architectural sculpture is a lot of it is way up high and looks really tiny from the street. So part of the Guardians of Detroit project is to bring some of this stuff way up high that people never see and bring it down close in nice big color pictures for everyone to look at.
And how do you shoot stuff if it's way up high? Do you use drones, tall ladders, or what?
No, I get asked that a lot. I use a 600 millimeter zoom lens.
Oh, okay.
And stand on the sidewalk for most of it. Although there's sometimes where I have to get up a little higher or get a different vantage point to see the buildings.
So do you ever get right up to the top of a building? Have you done that before?
I have not done that.
Okay.
There is a church. There's Fort Street Presbyterian Church.
Oh, I love that church. Yeah.
And there was it was built in 1875, 1855.
Ooh.
And really there was a building built right next door to it about 25 years later. They're a community house. And there's a lot of sculpture on the building, on the church itself, that's hidden by the community house. And the only way you can see it is to go into the community house, go out a window onto one of the lower roofs, and then there's a ladder, and you climb up to another roof, and you can see the pictures or see the
sculptures.
Probably
more than most people want to invest, right?
You know, yeah. So. I think a lot of those sculptures, most of that sculpture hasn't been seen by the general public for 100 years at least.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So what's up with the gargoyle thing? I've never understood what is a gargoyle. I mean, I was in France, saw them around, all around Notre Dame and all that. What do they do?
Well, there's gargoyles and grotesques. A lot of people use the term gargoyle for what's actually a grotesque. A gargoyle.
What am I looking at here? Is this?
That's a grotesque.
That's a grotesque. Okay.
A gargoyle is actually a means of keeping water from running down the wall of the building.
Really?
It's as long as the water is taken from the drain spout and out through the gargoyle and just falls free to the ground, and the gargoyle itself is a decoration meant to dress up the water spout, basically. And
okay.
If water
I thought it had more significance.
So it's a downspout with attitude.
Yeah, basically. There you go. I like that. Okay. Yeah,
and if water doesn't flow through it, it's an ornamentation or a grotesque or something like that.
Hmm. Interesting.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Catherine, tell us a little bit about the Research Coalition and you know, sort of how that got off the ground and just why Lawrence Tech is interested in this.
So we had in 1978, we had Albert Kahn's personal working library from the new center, from his new center office, given on personal loan to Lawrence Tech. And it's sort of a Greenfield Village version of things where they took down the walnut cabinets and the stained glass windows. And we have some of the furniture from his original office, along with 3,000 wonderful books that encompass all kinds of subjects. And what we like to think is that Albert Kahn used those books and that collection sort of like a Googling technique. So if he needed a inspiration for a design, he went to his library. And that library then shows us a lot about his life, how he collected, what he considered important, where he got his inspirations. And for Jeff Morrison's exhibit on that we're also hosting, he's zeroing in on some of the Kahn buildings and the sculpture for those buildings. So I actually had a question for Jeff. I don't know the answer, but what of the buildings that Kahn had an influence on is the most interesting as far as ornamental sculpture?
Well, I think
for you,
for me personally, I think the Fisher Building is because it has so much. It has about 150 different sculptures on it.
Really?
A lot of them 32 stories above the street.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to see them up there, right?
But it was also, a lot of it was created, the sculpture in general was designed by a sculptor brought from Hungary called Géza Maródi. And he wanted to create a new type of sculptural language for buildings. And the sculpture is intended to represent, you know, American technological power and commercial power. It's built by the Fisher brothers, who were a big part of General Motors.
Yeah, Fisher Body.
Yeah, exactly. And the building itself is very, very unique in that it's one of the largest marble-clad buildings in the world. And all this marble came from a little place, a small quarry in Maryland. It's called Beaver Dam Marvella Marble. It's very pretty. It's like pink and lots of veins and grain to it. And when you see some of the sculptures that are carved out of this, it's really, really unique and really beautiful.
Hmm. I guess this is a question for both of you. You know, a famous architect like, say, Frank Lloyd Wright, people kind of get an idea for what he was into and what he was trying to say with his buildings. What was Albert Kahn trying to say with a lot of the stuff that he did?
So I'll give it a try, and I'm sure Jeff will have something to say as well. So Kahn had a very, very wide style. He had both residential designs, such as the Henry Ford Estates in Cranbrook has a wonderful Kahn design, and regular people's homes, so to speak. But he also had these sort of civic structures as Jeff just mentioned, the Fisher Building, and is probably best known in the architectural community for his industrial architecture. So his factories, his alliances with Henry Ford, and even his influence on, of all things, Soviet industrial factories, and the fact that I think Michael Hodges will bring out an interesting story about how he thinks World War II was shortened because of Albert Kahn's influence in the Soviet Union. Jeff, what do you think? Have you noticed anything about the Kahn buildings in particular?
Well, Albert Kahn was known for always trying to express the function of the building on the outside of the building. So, for example, one of the buildings that's in the show is the police headquarters on Bobion, which is in the news recently because it was just purchased by Dan Gilbert's company and they're going to redevelop it, although they'd been talking for years that they might tear it down. But that's a unique – that expresses that idea where the first three floors are open to the public and they have a big monumental entrance with a lot of sculpture around them. And then that's one of the purposes of the sculpture is to help define where – look at the building and you know where to go in, and to provide the features of the building. And then there's a what's called a string course, like a dividing horizontal dividing line, and you have about five floors of offices, and then the holding cells were up on the top two floors, and which was unique. That was like an innovation for that type of building, because usually the holding cells would be put down in the cellars in the basement, kind of like a dungeon. And this was supposed to make it more escape-proof, although a year or two after it was opened, couple pickpockets described as old timers in the newspaper article I read managed to escape simply because the detectives forgot to lock the door the room they put them in, and they just opened the door and walked out.
Yeah, that's an important thing. Well, locking the door in a jail is always a pretty basic pretty helpful idea. Yeah. Well, the thing that I had always heard about Kahn was that his brother was pretty instrumental, I guess, in his career also, right? Because his brother was essentially the inventor of steel-reinforced concrete,
right,
that allowed industrial buildings to be built both larger, heavier, but with fewer columns in the middle of them, which sort of opened up industrial buildings and made them less like sort of the old, tiny, dingy,
more light,
New England mill type buildings.
Better environment for a worker. Yeah,
but he was also big into windows in industrial buildings, and that hadn't been a big deal up to that point.
Exactly. So Julius Kahn in 1904 had a patent on the first, what you're referring to is in the concrete truss. The company was called Truss-Kahn, and it made a huge difference in the ability to put together these factories in an economical way quickly. And that's how he was able to put over 900 buildings in the Detroit area alone.
Wow.
As many of which are not up anymore. But.
Okay. Catherine and Jeff, we're under a minute to go now. Catherine, give us one last rundown on the event, date, time, and location, please.
Okay. So it's Wednesday, March 28th at 7 p.m. You do not need to register. It is a free event. There's free parking. If you need more information, you can call us at the library at 248-204-3000. We also have a website at www.ltu.edu/Albert Kahn. And we also have a coalition Facebook page that you can come and take a look at. Just look at Albert Kahn Research Coalition. I'd really also like to thank Jeff for coming. I'm very interested in seeing his exhibit and his talk as well.
Yeah, I'm on campus and haven't seen the exhibit yet, but I'm looking forward to it now. All right, Catherine Phillips from the Lawrence Tech Library and historian and photographer Jeff Morrison with information about his show and his book, Guardians of Detroit, Architectural Sculpture in the Motor City. Yeah, I'm a professional communicator. Yeah, yeah. How about that? Okay. We'll be right back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you are indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast right here on the PodcastDetroit.com network.
Indeed. And we have with us a regular. She's smiling right now.
A longtime friend of the show.
Be careful now. We can't say old friend.
No, long time.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Tim Boucher, you know, I always get your title wrong at Engage. Are you, what's the official title?
I'm officially the director of Engage.
Ah, okay. The director. I got manager down on the sheet here, but I knew it was one. She runs the show. Okay?
And Engage is
any other name, she's the boss.
And right. Engage is a forum for second stage women entrepreneurs run by InForum, which used to be called the Women's Economic Club back in the day.
Very good. He can't be taught. Huh?
Back in the day.
Yeah. Okay. But it is a program that encourages women to take the next step in entrepreneurship.
And, leading to million-dollar businesses, right?
Go down that list again. I love that list about how many jobs and millions and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me again, guys. Really appreciate it. So we've had 100 women actually go through the Engage program at InForum. They've created 41 brand-new companies, created 384 jobs. They've been granted 35 patents, and they've gone on to raise $41.8 million in follow-on funding and $9.1 million in government contracts.
Great.
Big money. Doing some great stuff. Yeah, we love that economic boost to the economy.
Yes.
Michigan.
So let me also throw in before you start on your guest here that you are also helping us organize a track at IoT Tech Connect on April 4th at the Troy Marriott. Where's that bell? Okay, there we go. And yours is incubators, accelerators, training, and all that.
Incubators, accelerators, contacts in the ecosystem, and then women in tech.
Yes. They have a women in tech panel that near and dear to your heart, probably
very
most of your students, right?
Yes, or ex-students. Absolutely. All of the alum from Engage Masterclass.
Okay,
definitely.
Cool. All right. Well, I had to get that in there. We got that out of the way. And now you can go on and interview, who do we have? Amy Swift.
We have Amy today.
I was going to say hip hugger, but it's building hugger. Yes.
That's the first time I've heard that one.
So go ahead.
In the 60s. So it was a perfect segue to have the discussion of Albert Kahn right before this, because Amy's doing amazing things in the city also. So welcome. So glad you're here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So building hugger, really cool name for a company. Tell us where you got that name.
It's a long story and a short story. I had started my career as an architect, and I was working in Chicago, for a big corporate company, and I was on the green track. So I was doing sustainable design there, and everyone would tease me and say, "Oh, you're like a tree hugger," and I'd say, "Well, actually, I'm more of a building hugger. I am pursuing environmental stewardship through being a better steward of the built environment." So that sort of framed my career. Building Hugger has taken on, a life of its own, and especially here doing work in Detroit. So it's taken us to window restoration as being our sort of mainstay here. It was one of the things that after I moved back to Detroit in 2011 and I started doing consulting work, I noticed that there's a real lack of skilled trades, specifically historic trades, and more specifically window restoration. So it's something that I've kind of evolved into doing, and we've been very busy and very successful as we've honed our skills and our processes towards that.
That's very cool. So actually, I saw you shaking your head when we were talking about the police police building earlier. So have you been involved in any restoration?
No. I actually, you don't know how apt it is that we were talking about Albert Kahn because I used to teach architectural history at Lawrence Tech, ironically enough.
Yeah. All right.
And one of the, you know, I had an entire lecture on Albert Kahn and his influence, not only locally, but also globally in architecture. And more specifically to my own practice, because Henry Ford is always credited with the development of the assembly line and factory efficiencies. But he was working in tandem with Albert Kahn, and it was Kahn's philosophies of spatial management that really allowed Ford to translate a lot of his scientific management theories into actual working flow on the factory floor. So one of the things that I realized when I started to get into the window restoration business was, I realized really quickly why there were no businesses like this. It's because it's incredibly inefficient and cost heavy and very regulated because we deal with lead paint. And so one of the things that, I have been trying to research and implement is more of a Kahn-based philosophy to the way that we set our shop up and the way that we train our workers and the way that we essentially run our business. So you didn't even know how appropriate it was that I was here on the Albert Kahn Day.
No idea. I thought it was a fortunate coincidence.
All these LTU connections must make your heart warm.
Oh, yeah, it sure does. Yeah, and hopefully my bosses too. Yeah. So, okay.
It's LTU Day at M2 TechCast.
Yeah.
So, Amy, big question I have for you is, what is the biggest misconception that people have about preservation? Because with all of, you know, the Dan Gilberts and such coming in and mm-hmm. doing development in the city,
yeah,
people aren't always looking to preserve. They want to tear down and rebuild. What's so important about the preservation?
I think that the biggest misconception is that preservation is harder that it is anti-development. Preservationists here want to see these buildings come back online and be vibrant and lived in and worked in. And there are better ways to do it or worse ways to do it. Every preservationist that I know here in the city is usually pretty open-minded, maybe compared to other markets where there's a lot more development pressures. I went to school at Columbia, so when we were studying preservation, it was always anti-development, because that's what you had to be in Manhattan. But here, it's a very different story. So I was on the phone with a client today who was, telling me it was harder to work in historic districts. But we don't have trouble working in historic districts because we know the right things to do. And frankly, I think preservationists have a longer vantage point. We are able to look further backwards, and so we're able to also look further forward. I do small scale development myself. I'm in the Building Better Communities class right now that Chase Cantrell that he hosts and organizes, I understand the numbers. I understand, we have to make it work. And we do a lot of structured services for developers and for investors so that they can work in a historic district but also make the numbers work on their spreadsheets. So we understand both. But I think that's the biggest misconception, that we're heels in the dirt and incapable of, coming to any sort of common ground.
Absolutely. And that's fantastic. So have you been involved in the train station at all downtown? Helping
no.
with the windows there?
I mostly just drive by in horror there. But I'm happy that there's no open holes in the building anymore. But actually what they did to put the windows into those openings, they ripped out the central jambs. There used to actually be two double hung windows in each one of those openings, and they ripped the central jambs out in order to put just one piece of glass with taped mullions. I'm super happy that it is a stabilized building because, when someone does, it's mothballed, right? It's mm-hmm. instead of boards, there were windows put into those openings. And that's better than what it was. But, and those windows probably won't do for, whatever moves in there in the future. So there'll probably be another window campaign, I would suspect.
I was just curious whether you were familiar with the Ford Piquette Avenue plant in Detroit.
I am a little familiar with that,
with that project, because that's been one of their big things, is gradually raising money to redo all those windows. That's,
yeah, and they have someone in-house there that actually has a workshop set up and does the repairs on site there. Yeah. And I've heard of workshops and things like that happening.
So have you seen it? I mean, are they doing a good job? Or
Yeah, it looks like they're doing a good job. Okay. I haven't actually been to the I don't get out much. I own a business. I work like 80-hour weeks.
Yeah, ask Mike about that. Yeah, okay, yep. Well, yeah, the reason I say that is because Lawrence Tech was involved in a project there, too, to do a remote robot docent where there would be a robot that would follow the docent around, so you could go on a docent tour virtually on a screen. And the robot would show you all the stuff that, happened at that plant way back when. That was Henry Ford's last plant before Highland Park, and so it was his last plant that didn't have a moving assembly.
Well, what am I supposed to do when I retire and I want something to do on the weekends? The robot is replacing me.
No, you still have a docent. You still have a docent. It's just the robot follows the docent around and puts the docent's presentation on the internet.
Oh, okay. That's very cool.
That's how it works. Yeah.
Okay.
So they made a robot that would follow a docent around.
Okay. That's, well, maybe I can watch it while I'm working late one night.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll get you out. I promise. So one of the questions I was thinking about before getting ready for today. So what role does the preservation of Detroit's historic structures play in its future?
Well, I mean, the reason that people want to move here, that want to stay here and be involved in the city, is because of its history and because it's an active, diverse, crazy little town. And when you get rid of that richness and you put up glass and steel, you really lose the soul of a place. And obviously, we've lost quite a bit already. And there's also, larger issues at play, that vacancy and blight and, half-burnt houses in neighborhood streets.
Like really nice Edwardian mansions with trees growing up in them.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So,
right?
There are challenges still to maintaining what we even still have left. But I think that it's worth the fight to try to figure out how to keep what we do have. I think that preservationists here, like I said, are pretty open-minded in terms of how that gets accomplished. We're fighting the good fight, trying to kind of be a triage nurse out there and save what we can, knowing that we won't be able to save them all.
That's terrific. But you're doing really good work. So two things I really want to be specific about. You're a woman in the trades, which is not common.
Less than 9%.
Exactly. So it's like women entrepreneurs in tech.
Yeah.
Yep,
Well, to note, though, always more than half of my crew are women, and we're right now at about 3/4.
Awesome. And tell me, are you hiring?
Oh my God, yes.
Come on, it's
a Roush question.
We are hiring. I'm interviewing people all across the country, actually, and also locally, because we're hiring for our crew. We do a lot of training in house because we have to. There's no window school I can hire from. We're also hiring for a sales manager.
Okay, you've got about 30 seconds to tell me this, but I want you to give a commercial for Tember now. Tell me how Engage has helped you and how great the Engage program is.
We're just starting. So I'm super excited to be a part of it. I've done a lot of sort of entry level, I did the Build Institute. I've done the Michigan Women's Foundation, a Gopher Growth Program, and those are all to kind of get you started. And at this point, we're a $500,000 company, and we're looking to continue to grow. Mm-hmm. And I also have several other business ventures that I'm getting going, and so I really. This is what I need to plug into
Sounds like
right
me,
now.
You know?
Yeah.
Me in a different form, you know? But
I'm going to leave that one alone.
Yeah, right. Phrase it the way I wanted, but
Okay. All right. Well, Tember, thanks very much for a great segment as always. Tember Shea was here from Inforum's Engage program with Amy Swift, CEO of Building Hugger. Amy, you got a website?
Go to our Facebook page right now.
Okay. All right. So search for Building Hugger on Facebook and you will find Amy Swift.
There we are.
All right. Thanks, Tember.
Thank you.
For right now, this is Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast.
We have with us Dominic Holtz from the new medical Main Street manager at Oakland County, right?
That's right.
All right. And you're going to be talking a little bit about your commercialization focus, supplier directory, and you have a guest with you as well.
That's right. I'm joined by Joe Adrid here, who manages our commercialization efforts for medical Main Street.
Pleased to be here.
All right. Lean in there, Joe. All right. There you go. All right. We're good. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah. So in large part, Medical Main Street is focused on working with existing educational institutions, biosciences companies, health systems, R&D facilities and outfits to increase the viability of the health sciences sector in Oakland County, which is alive and vibrant. I think a lot of folks don't know that we already have a top 10 life sciences sector here in Oakland County, in Michigan.
I actually didn't know that.
That's right. That's right.
So we're doing a mic check there. Okay, so talk a little bit about your commercialization and supplier directory and all the stuff going on.
Sure. From a commercialization perspective, Medical Main Street is able to provide commercialization services to entrepreneurs and inventors and also medical device and technology companies. It means that we're able to assist those companies go from idea to market. And we do that by leveraging our consultants and also the Medical Main Street Network to guide them through the commercialization process. And really, we do this by starting with an assessment of the idea.
Yeah. So I think one of the interesting things is that a lot of folks know that because we have such a vibrant technology and engineering environment here with the autos, that we have a pretty good supplier base. And I think we as an initiative at Medical Main Street in Oakland County have determined that, that provides a pretty good opportunity for us to work with a lot of med device companies and attract those companies to our region. So we've been working heavily to do that. We've also been looking at a lot of med tech companies, which also seem to benefit from some of the, ecosystem that we've already developed here in this area.
What are some of the bigger companies in Oakland County that would fit those descriptions? I'm not familiar with this sector at all.
Yeah. So we've got presence for Stryker currently. We've got a fair amount of companies. Of course, we have a lot of large health systems, McLaren, Ascension.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so what's interesting is if you take a look at the top 25 employers in Oakland County and probably in the wider region, you'll note that about 8 of those companies, and actually the number one company, are all health systems and health-related innovation companies.
Okay.
And so, the environment is live and well here.
Hmm.
There are a lot of other manufacturers, though. There are other manufacturers who focus on in-home wellness products. We've got distributors and manufacturers of orthotic and prosthetic devices. We've got companies that manufacturers who look at heart valves, and also let's not forget that Oakland, Southeast Michigan, actually is the top 10 life science cluster within Michigan.
So what are some of the workforce issues that employers face here? How do you help with that?
Well, I think, you know, the largest issues we find that are, you know, most prevalent, I would say, are that folks are often having a hard time finding, you know, highly qualified people in certain areas. So we look for our health systems that have needs in the nursing area, but they also need somebody who's IT savvy, who can also operate a computer and operate in a technically, you know, advanced environment. And so what's unique about our services and what we're able to do is that we've partnered with the state of Michigan and some of our other partners at the local community level to provide resources like our Michigan New Jobs Training Program and our Skilled Trades Training Fund, which can help to upskill some of the workforce that we have here in the state of Michigan and Oakland County.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is a lot of people are saying, you know, oh, well, we don't have a job. Well, it's, oh, well, you don't have the training. And so
that's right.
If they want to put the effort in, it's not like you got to go to college for 4 years to get these skills. You can get a lot of these really savvy technology skills in 6 months to a year, right?
That's right. So increasingly, we're finding that apprenticeship opportunities do extend to the health sciences. Oakland County, Michigan Works and some of our other, you know, talent and workforce related partners have done a swell job bringing those programs to the forefront. And frankly, you know, the job that Joe and I do out in the community is to make our companies aware of the resources that are available to them. You know, we're mostly focused on trying to highlight the programs and the services that are most of need and push those companies forward so they can grow and, you know, be prosperous here in the region.
Okay, well, I'm going to plug an LTU event here.
Go right ahead. I know it competes with mine, but I'll let you get away with it anyway. So.
Okay. Well, coming up on April 4th in the afternoon, the same day as IoT Tech Connect, unfortunately, but both were scheduled independently long ago. Lawrence Tech has an event called the Science and Technology Showcase that is organized, actually, in partnership with Oakland County Medical Main Street and Tech 248. And we are going to showcase our students at Lawrence Tech who have life science and similar backgrounds. We've got a growing program in molecular and cell biology. We've got a nursing program. We've got, you know, a whole bunch of life sciences programs. And basically, that's open to employers who want to come in and meet students that are potential future employees.
That's right. And we've had upwards of 50 employers, you know, beat down our door basically to get into that that showcase event because it's such a, you know, a great chance for them to meet with, you know, talented young folks. And, you know, one of the things we've heard from the folks at LTU is that their biomedical engineering program is just, you know, jumping off the shelf. Employers are beating down the door to get to those folks.
Yep. And the nice thing for us is as a sort of STEM-focused school that's struggled with diversity issues, there's a lot of women in those programs now.
That's right.
Which is really great to see.
Yeah, including Tanya Matthews. That's her background from the Michigan Science Center.
Yep, and and the director of our Marburger STEM Center at Lawrence Tech, Sabrina Collins, is a inorganic chemist by educational background. She got a PhD from Ohio State, but we won't talk about that school.
That school down south is how we refer to them.
Okay, so. I mean, this was one of the ideas that Brooks Patterson, Oakland County administrator, had, right, to chase these 10 growing sectors, and life sciences was one of them.
That's correct.
And this one, I mean, do you have any numbers on, you know, sort of what Oakland County's numbers are in this industry now?
Well, so I can say roughly that we have 10 sectors, and I would say Medical Main Street accounts for most of our impact and activity in the county. I mean, it's been a stellar success, led by, as you mentioned, Brooks Patterson, and also, you know, pushed forward by Irene Spanos at the county. Yeah. And so it's been a wonderful program for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how many jobs are available in this space? Have you guys done a study on that at all? I mean, are we talking hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands?
Well, that's a good question. I guess if you're to believe the Marshall Plan, you know, that the governor's laid out, there are hundreds of thousands of jobs that will be available in this space in the coming years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're just running fast trying to help our employers meet the needs that they have today. And that is keeping us quite busy.
What is like the number one job or title or whatever that they're seeking right now? When employers contact you, what's the one you hear all the time?
So we're hearing a lot about the need for machine operators, CNC operators. We're hearing a lot about the need for PAs, physician's assistants, nurses. You know, it really ranges. Of course, the machine operators are on the med device and on the, you know, durable goods side. But we're hearing a lot about those professions. Those are the ones that the Skilled Trades Fund, the Trade and Training Fund, and all the other opportunities that I talked about at Oakland County Michigan Works are really helping us to fulfill.
Well, and the CNC's, that's one of those I was talking about earlier. 6 months to a year, you can have a really good job as a CNC operator.
That's right. And so one of the interesting things that we've been able to do in conjunction with Oakland County Michigan Works is, you know, start to push out their apprenticeship guide. They created a pretty comprehensive guide that provides a roadmap for students and those that are interested in, you know, entering a new career, you know, and how to get certified in 2 to 4 years often. So it's a pretty valuable resource for our employers.
So talk about the supplier directory a little bit. I know that can be a very important thing just to let companies know that other companies exist, you know, that are right in their own backyard that can meet their needs.
Exactly. So when we go out on the road and we do our attraction missions, we go out to conferences and trade shows where these companies are present, you know, it's important for us to be able to, you know, basically provide evidence that we have, you know, a diverse set of suppliers that are capable of fulfilling all the needs they may have. And so we put together a pretty comprehensive, you know, document. That document is available online at medicalmainstreet.com. And one of the things that we're working on doing now is just making that a completely online document that can be updated at a moment's notice to reflect the, you know, the capabilities of the companies that exist here in Michigan and Oakland County.
So you're, you know, a county-based organization. Talk a little bit about your relationship with the state organization for the life sciences industry, MishBio, and then the national organization, Bio.
So we have been working on some initiatives. I think one of the biggest things that we've been able to work on are opportunities to go out and attract companies and to look at some of the existing you know, ecosystem of companies. So especially on the commercialization side where Joe is focused, there are a lot of companies that are able to take advantage of the you know, resources that they are able to provide. And then at a larger level or upstream, take advantage of some of the incentives that we can coordinate to help them grow.
Interesting. In terms of total employment in the county, do you have your arms around how many folks are employed in this space?
That is a really, really good question.
I caught you flat-footed there.
You did
huh?
catch me all flat-footed right. there. Yeah, yeah.
Ballpark figure. What do you think? Are we talking tens of thousands?
You know, I would say probably 100,000 workers is what we estimated.
Huh?
I think that was our estimate about a year or more ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a lot of folks.
All right. And, you know, these, you know, it's just really interesting how broad this field is, too, because it's not just pharmaceutical or drug discovery. It's a lot of things that can be adapted into medical devices. And that's one thing we're good at around here is making stuff, right?
That's right. That's right. We've seen a lot of interesting innovation around health informatics, wearable devices. You know, of course,
everybody's got a Fitbit now, right?
That's right. That's right. And we're starting to see more and more telehealth, you know, integrated into our devices. So we've seen, you know, everything from knee rehabilitation devices that actually are able to connect and, you know, provide information to the physician who's at the, you know, facility and keep track of a patient's progress in their home. I mean, there are so many innovations that are just, you know, continue to come forward that we're amazed by.
And we have a lot of entrepreneurs who are looking at like memory enhancement software development to combat Alzheimer's. We also have entrepreneurs who are looking at non-addictive pain medication to combat the opioid epidemic. We have a lot going on as far as the entrepreneurs are concerned.
Okay, so if people want more information about Medical Main Street and getting helped by your organization, how do they get a hold of you?
So the best place to find us is on the web at medicalmainstreet.com.
Simple enough.
Okay.
That's right.
And one more time, let's go over your event on April 4th in the afternoon, mind you.
So you can go to IoT Tech Connect in the morning and then steal away for a couple of hours if you're interested in life science, very talented workers. It's the LTU Science and Technology Showcase Wednesday, April 4th from 3 to 5 p.m. on campus. We're going to have dozens of students there. Basically, it's like a science fair. You know, they're going to have a lot of poster presentations on their research
work. Will it be like a volcano erupting?
No. But it was funny because last year I know this girl got hired by a medical lab company and she had done a research project on some tomato fungus disease. Huh. And I talked to the guy who was there looking for employees and he says, I really don't care about tomato fungus disease, but the fact that she can do this kind of work tells me that that's the kind of person I need.
That's right.
You know, so yeah, he didn't really care about tomato fungus.
So if you're a specialist in tomato fungus disease, you're in then,
yeah,
huh?
I guess so.
Okay.
She went to work for a company that makes reagents and other chemicals and equipment for pharmaceutical companies when they do their tests.
Okay.
So that's where she's working now. So, all right. Well, I want to thank Dominique Holmes from Medical Main Street and the rest of our guests today. We had Tim Berchet here from Inforum's Engage program for women entrepreneurs, talking to Amy Swift of Building Hugger, which sounded like a really cool company. We had Lawrence Tech University librarian Catherine Phillips and historian and photographer Jeff Morrison. I did want to give Jeff's email, please. It's guardiansofdetroit@gmail.com. So that's guardiansofdetroit@gmail.com.
We'll get that in the promo, too, when we put the podcast out.
Okay. And we started off the show with our only call-in today, the Mobile Technology Association of Michigan's longtime CEO, Linda Deschent, talking about the IoT Tech Connect program. I guess that brings us all the way back full circle in our plugs, because that's your event, right,
yep,
Mike?
So that's my plug.
Okay.
April 4th, all day long.
All day long.
And we feed you.
And into the night, I might add.
Yeah, into the night. Yeah. VIP reception.
Yep. So that's going to be a great one. Check it out at IoT Tech Connect. What's the website?
IoTTechConnect.com.
Okay. Well, I think we've covered it. Another good show.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week at 2 p.m. Eastern Time with another edition of the M Squared TechCast.
And I think we're rolling out the Jessica Cam next week, right?
Sure. Right. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. We got to buy her that outfit that we all talked about online. So, you know.
The bowling shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, I could just see it with the little circle on her on her shoulder there. Yeah, Jessica. You know, in the old fashioned script. I can
like
see it now.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe not, folks, but we will be back next week.
Monday. We'll keep you guessing. When is that Jessica Cam gonna really show up, right?
2 PM Eastern time. Eastern Daylight time now.
Yes, that's right.
Next Monday. And until then, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.